Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 134, coming at you on a Tuesday night, which means Bloom Board night. Gonna have some fun talking about a new Bloom Board, some recent news, and much, much more. See what other rabbit holes we can go down and mispronunciations I can have for you. But until then, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
You were already going down a bad rabbit hole before we just started hitting record. Right now we're watching the Giants Dodgers game together pre-show, and it's 10-1 Giants. Dodgers.
No. 10-1.
Dodgers. And
it was 6-1 when we sat down, Ryan.
Yes. 6-1. Yes, and so it's just getting worse and worse, and so might as well hit record to lift your spirits, man. It's bad. It's bad in your neck of the woods. So many injuries. And then you've got Jorge Soler hitting himself in the head in the BP cage today. Not great, man. Not great.
No, it's not great at all. Appreciate it. Thanks for the kind words. Great.
Yeah, but you got to see a Matt Chapman Grand Slam in person last weekend.
Yeah, so I saw a unicorn on Saturday. So that was fun. Saw a unicorn, scared the snot out of my daughter at the same time. It was a lot of fun. It was good times, but, yeah, it was a fun game. They at least held on and won, which was good, and might not see many more of those in the future. So at least I got that one to notch under the belt.
I'm trying to lift you up, my friend. Trying to get you going.
And the bright side with them losing is the tickets just get cheaper and cheaper as the season goes on. So I can sit from outside the stadium and still enjoy the game. It's going to be awesome. So it's a beautiful thing. But
you get those Bubba and the Bloom Club level seats next time.
Yes, only the finest. From the Goodyear blimp. But yeah, fun stuff there. Baseball's been wild. Many injuries, couple call-ups, but
this week for me, I don't know about you, maybe it's just pitchers I have. Like the starting pitcher wins have died this week.
Yes.
It has been so frustrating to have a lot of You'd rather have a good starting pitcher performance than a bad one. But it wasn't just my teams, but like I saw Paul Spohr had a tweet, a screenshot or whatever, one of his teams, I don't know which one, but like something like 20 plus innings, 4 in runs from 3 or 4 starting pitchers and no wins. I think Reese Olson and Ryan Weathers tonight on Tuesday night both went 8 scoreless and neither got the win. Yep. AJ Puck got the save, by the way. But there was it feels like there's been a lot of that this week where it's just like kill the damn win. I had Shota Imanaga and Sean Manaea both get shut out of wins with a combined 1 earned run. Edwin Diaz blew the save. So
yeah, I had like Jordan Hicks throw. Like I had one of those yesterday. I had 3 starters go dealt well over a K per inning, 0 wins. It was just like, what in the world? I had one of my closers throw a perfect 9th, no save. It was just like a whole, what is going on? And I even tweeted it out because I kind of was MIA over the weekend, just enjoying the festivities of the weekend. And I looked at my standings on Sunday and I was like, I was doing really, really well at pitching. Not so much. Started looking at my teams. Finally got the blowups came my direction this past week and it was not pretty at all. So some regression has hit. That is for sure.
Chat's already popping. So if you are in the chat, we got Michael, we've got Uncle Ted. Uncle Ted is back with a Wensiel Perez tweet, which is expected. Let's get the chat going and keep it going throughout the show this evening. We always appreciate it.
Yes, we do. And let's get cracking on some of the recent news and notes. Again, I'm not going to cover all of it because there's a bunch of it, but we'll get some of the pertinent ones here for you over the last couple of days. And the Baltimore Orioles are at it again, Bloomfield. They called up a prospect in Kyle Stowers to play the outfield. They sent Heston Kjerstad back to AAA, who played a whole whopping 7 games out of the 17 he was up for. It was pretty awesome. And then Stowers didn't even start on Tuesday. Yeah. So we're back in this mess.
Right. So like, I don't know, maybe one of these times we'll get over frustrated and miss an Orioles call up and get burned by it. But I don't know, given the Keston Hurstad, as I call him, treatment, I don't see myself going after Stowers.
Nope.
At all. Really. I mean, he hit .240 in AAA this year. 165 plate appearance, had the power, 11 homers, but like, I don't know. I'm not going there. Not doing that again.
Yeah, Kjerstad at least hit for average and power. Couser has quieted down quite a bit. There's no milk at the ballpark these days. So it's been a rough go all around. As Gialdi says here, Caminero, a different situation, but Caminero played second base, homered at AAA after hearing Brandon Lowe negative outlook. Call up soon. Well, we'll go straight to the Brandon Lowe news, and I'll pivot back here. Yeah. But Brandon Lowe had a setback. That was the report Monday, early Tuesday. But I did want to mention, I was actually doing prep for another show, and Brandon Lowe has been cleared to participate in activities to his pain tolerance, is the way they phrased it. So he's going to work out in St. Pete the next couple of days and then join Durham on Friday to begin his rehab assignment once again. We'll see. It'd be great to see Caminero, but it feels like they're doing everything in their power to bring Lowe back without Caminero involved.
Yeah, and I guess, I don't know, recovering from a setback with Lowe, it's all temporary. Like, I don't want to sound too negative, but the guy just gets hurt all the time and can't piece together a full season. So at some point, it's going to go back again. But definitely noteworthy that Junior Caminero switching over to second base, at least this evening in the minors. Trying to read the tea leaves and see when that call-up gets called up because, yeah, Caminero really does have nothing to prove in the minors. And I think even, you know, depending on league rules, whatever, I'm sure in the most NFBC formats, he's probably still stashed, at least in 15 teamers. Now's the time to make sure you have a Junior Caminero. I think it's coming very soon.
It should be very, very soon. That's for sure. So get on that one. It's interesting. Like, the second base makes sense. Like, you're talking about to get the future, playing time or however you want to look at it. But it also affects your Amed Rosario platoon with Richie Palacios at second base. So it's just kind of a smorgasbord of what's going on in that situation. So we'll see, but definitely something to keep in mind. All righty. TJ Friedl back on the IL. Dude misses the start of the season. He comes back for six games and then gets hit on the hand. He's got a fractured thumb, back on the IL. They're going to do more testing to see the length of his timeout. But for now, he is down. Jacob Herdeboise, I totally mispronounced that probably, got called up. I can't get his player page to load, so I can't give you any information on him.
Two-star review just came in. I just saw that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fine. But prospect people are pretty pumped on him. We'll see. Didn't really play yet. Will Benson's getting his time. Fraley's getting his time. Bottom line is TJ Friedl. What are you doing with him? Because a lot of people spent $5 on him this past weekend.
Yeah, I even held him in a couple leagues, where at least one league where Fab League where I could, and Friedl will no longer be held. Especially, like you said, the same hand. I mean, I think that appendage is probably toast for this year. Even when Friedl comes back, like I don't know, it's already enough with the first injury he had, and now with the hand, I don't know. He's a cut. Just one of those years you chalk it up, and it will be interesting come 2025 draft season, which for some is only 3 months away, perhaps, where TJ Friedl's price lands. Because I'm telling you now, he's probably going to be on some kind of recency bias bloom board type of thing this coming off season. TJ Friedl will be, because it's not really, these are just two freak injuries that happened, you know, back to back. Can't really do anything about it.
Yep, I could definitely see that. All right, here you go. That can't be right. Okay, so Michael Cicchini says, I played Little League with Herdeboise. He was terrible. It's pronounced Herdeboise. Herdeboise. There we go. I wasn't even close, like I thought. So beautiful.
Hey, we got the Little League scouting reports here on Bubba and the Bloom. Things you cannot find anywhere else in the fantasy 100%. Baseball podcast world.
All right, Reese's Pieces. This one's a bummer because people say, oh, he's injury prone. But hamstring injury for Reese Hoskins, who's having a monster comeback season for the Milwaukee Brewers. Report about an hour or two before we started the show is Reese Hoskins going to be out for 2 to 4 weeks. Owen Miller was called up, not Tyler Black. But Reese is out for 2 to 4 weeks. Are we holding Reese Hoskins?
Yes. Yes, I think given if it is only 2 to 3 weeks, I think you got to hold if you can. Just because the power looked awesome, 16 barrels, sorry, already for Reese Hoskins with 9 homers. Did not deserve the .233 batting average that Reese Hoskins had through 156 plate appearances. Strikeouts were down, BABIP was down. So I think with more time, that batting average comes back up for Reese Hoskins. So I'm in the firm hold camp with Hoskins. I was expecting Tyler Black to come back. I thought it'd be Tyler Black. I don't understand. Maybe they need the flexibility with Owen Miller, but like God, it's Owen Miller. We know what Owen Miller can do and not do. More so the latter.
When you have Bowers just crushing balls now, like he's
career. Yeah, maybe. I mean, I kind of laughed at your Bowers suggestion last show, but like he is hitting. So maybe it is that. Too. Maybe they're just going to roll there. Yes. Yeah.
Three,
doesn't he have like
three homers steals? And three steals? The dude's balling out right now. It's it's pretty, pretty interesting. Thomas Travato in the chat says replacement for Hoskins. I would need options that you might have available because that's very league dependent.
I'm sure we'll cover a bunch of corner first base guys on Thursday as well.
Yeah. Thursday. We did a lot of corner this past week. We'll get to more this upcoming week, but there seem to be more and more keep showing up. And one of these days, I'm just weirdly expecting Brandon Belt to get signed. I don't know why, but
Bubba, the Giants are 1-0 since we started the show in terms of runs scored.
The youngsters are hitting. Watch out, folks! Don't call it a comeback. Speaking of the Giants, Jung Hoo Lee, separated shoulder, dislocated shoulder. Depends on where you read because it has literally changed every like few hours based on reports. He had an MRI, went and saw a specialist. Results weren't good there. Gave him a second opinion. With as Ryan likes to call him, Mr. What, reattach, deattach,
Dr. Reattach,
I think Jung Hoo Lee's done for the year, folks. So this doesn't feel good at all.
No, and like talking before the show, but like the Giants outfield. Oh, I mean, what do you think? Like Luis Matos, is he mildly interesting fantasy wise? Is there anything to do out there right now or?
He's hitting today, but his defense is horrific. Elliot Ramos, as I said on bench with Bubba, I was shocked. I'm literally sitting there as they're doing player introductions at the game on Saturday. I've heard Helio on every show I've ever heard, any podcast, everywhere. Same. All I ever thought it was. And I am sitting in the seats, like getting some food for the little one, and they are announcing player by player, and they said Elliot Ramos. And I'm like, no way. Comes up the bat. Elliot Ramos. So it's Elliot. I did not see that one coming. So I think Elliot is an interesting choice. I think he's got a lot of pop. Actually was hitting well in AAA. Matos was not, but Matos is young. He's 22. And Ramos isn't that old, but he's older. So I give my nod to Ramos, but Matos could have some legs because they need someone to play right now. If they're going to get run, like, why not at this point in time?
I mean, they both could conceivably play every day center and left, so and they have both been playing every day on righty on righty the last couple of days. So I mean
they have nobody. Like it's their time to put up or shut up at this point in time.
I was watching some Giants game the other night and saw Jackson Reitz come up. I'm like, who in the hell is Jackson Reitz?
Yep, he's the third or fourth string catcher. He's up because everybody's hurt there, too. Patrick Bailey went back on the concussion IL on Tuesday, and they called up Marco Luciano, who just hit the double play ball. So, it's a mess in San Francisco. I'm glad we're back on the subject. Listeners must love it. But the bottom line there is Jung Hoo Lee done for the season, is what I'm expecting to hear in the next couple of days. So, there you go. Houston Astros, Christian Javier will be returning to the rotation on Thursday. And we were all thinking, okay, Hunter Brown's done. No, Hunter Brown's going to move to Friday. And apparently the Astros are going to go with a six-man rotation for now, which kind of makes sense. You know, Verlander you want to play with. You got Spencer Arrighetti, Mr. Spaghetti in there. You got some young arms that you kind of want to baby along. So for now, six-man, we've talked every preseason. We talked like all these teams are going to go six-man. How many actually do for very long? Not many. So we'll see how long this works. But for now, the Astros look to be going six-man rotation, which kills your two start weeks.
Yep, that's the biggest, I think, fantasy takeaway is you don't really get any two-start weeks from your Frambers, your obviously Javier, Hunter Brown, which I don't know if you even want. I'm surprised at the Spencer Arrighetti. I mean, the guy is a 7.52 ERA.
Horrible.
190 whip. Like, what are we doing there? Maybe the Astros see, I'm sure they see this, and if not more, the sub indicators for Spencer Arrighetti aren't that bad. 13% swinging strike and a league average ball rate. So maybe there's that, but Little surprised at the six man, but like you said, like what's the over under on how long this lasts before the next injury? 2-3 weeks. So wouldn't worry about it too much if you've got Houston starters.
And maybe the Astros are just noticing that the average bat speed and length of the bats against Arrigetti aren't that great. So he's got a hope somewhere. I don't know.
He did. We did not talk about the news of the week with bat speed. I know you guys covered it very well, and I actually agree with pretty much everything you and Ben said on your Monday bench with Bubba. But yeah, a lot of bat speed stuff out there.
What are your thoughts? You haven't had your chance to talk. What are you thinking?
It's been somewhat beaten to death at this point. The one thing I would add that you guys didn't have, I would encourage anyone to listen to the Bench with Bubba on Monday with Ben and Bubba. You guys talked about it right off the top. So the only thing I don't think you guys covered that I would like to see with bat speed is I want to see more than 1 year of data, a month and a half of data. What I'm interested in, and you've made this point since the beginning, since Monday when it came out, Bubba, was like, I want to see changes in bat speed, changes in swing length for a particular player over time. It doesn't do me very much to see what 6-7 weeks snapshot of a player's bat speed or whatever. I want to see, is Paul Goldschmidt down? Is his bat speed down from where it was last year, from where it was at his peak? How far is it down from its peak? Is Corbin Carroll, what does that bat speed look like versus what we saw, the pre-shoulder injury Corbin Carroll? That data does exist. It's just not publicly. And then, I mean, the biggest reason why I'd like to see multiple years of this data is what we're always interested in with fantasy baseball, because ultimately what it boils down to is, how does this help me? Is it predictive? We don't know that either. So very interesting. I don't want to like poo-poo it. I think it's very interesting stuff, and I'm sure we can have some good takeaways and discussions about it. Just a lot of kind of rush to post some stats and things like that. But I'm always a little hesitant to fully dive in on something until I know it's either predictive or there's a certain way we can use it that actually helps us make better fantasy decisions.
Yep, I agree. I think for now it's more of a real life tool that will eventually have some fantasy impact potentially. But for now, it's tough to really get like, oh yeah, you mean the guys hit the ball the hardest have the fastest swings? Okay, checks out. Checks out.
So, like you said, in the golf world, that's been explored very, very well,
very deeply for quite a while now. Like, it's been well known as a concept. So,
and it has been in baseball too. It's just now it's public.
Yeah, exactly. So. We'll see how that goes. All right, Bloomfield, it's your time to shine. Bloom board season is upon us. So what do you got for us tonight?
Oh, man, I took it down. What am I doing?
You got it up. You got it all ready to go pre-show. It's a fun one, too. Some very interesting names.
All right. So what we're looking at here, and again, I've got this. I've got two. I've got the classic green and red for risers and fallers. What we're looking at here is just surface stats level stuff this week, and I figure – for the show, we will dive a little bit deeper into the skills and talk about whether we think the rise is legit or the fall is legit, whatever. I've got batting average and home run risers versus last season. So very simple stuff this week. I'm for the risers, I've got players with the biggest increases in both batting average and home runs. And on the right side, biggest decreases in batting average and home runs. The only kind of asterisk here is home runs is obviously, since it's a counting stat, I'm going to do it per 600 plate appearances. So no, Nelson Velazquez did not hit 57 home runs in 2023. So you can see on the top right, but he was on a 57 home run pace over a full season, which is roughly 600 plate appearances for a hitter, which is pretty monster. But that's the only kind of disclaimer, I guess, for this board. Otherwise it's pretty straightforward, man.
Yep, and it's got some fun names that are like kind of standing out to start the season, which makes a ton of sense. So let's just kick it off here on the gainers side of things here. And we'll start at the top, a very popular name on the Twitter streets, and that is Tyler O'Neill, who has bloomed this season, I would say. He's hitting.
I mean, even the like execution of that was just – it was just – a bad idea and bad execution.
All right. He's excelling this season, hitting 265 with the Boston Red Sox after 231 last year. in St. Louis. Last year we saw the projected to hit 20 home runs. Right now he's looking to hit 45 over 60 or 600 plate appearances. He's crushing it. He's healthy. That's always been the thing with O'Neill for the most part. The lazy answer, he's healthy. What are you seeing when you look at Tyler O'Neill to this gaining situation?
I don't know. Obviously the change of scenery certainly helped Tyler O'Neill. I don't think there's any question him getting out of St. Louis and into Boston was not a bad thing. I think most of us kind of saw that this draft season. Couple changes in the swing, like a lot fewer ground balls. The ground ball fly ball for Tyler O'Neill is a lot different, and that's probably why you're seeing this uptick in barrel rate. Tyler O'Neill has hit the ball this hard before, but a lot of times it's been on the ground. In the past, Tyler O'Neill's been like a 42-43% ground ball guy. Now that's down to like 33% for O'Neill. So that's where the power is coming from. If I had to nitpick, and I'm going to, because I think for, and really a lot of these risers, I think these guys are kind of sell highs or like won't keep this pace. I don't see a 30% K rate jiving with a 265 batting average over a full season. And Tyler O'Neill has only stolen one base. So I wonder, really only attempted one steal. I know that's not on our board, but if we're talking general fantasy value, I think that's going to come back to hurt Tyler O'Neill's overall value. If he could get 10 to 15, like he did in 21 and 22 with these new rules, I think that would go a long way. But Tyler O'Neill, maybe it's a self-preservation thing, just is not running in Boston.
Yeah, not running is quite interesting. We're watching the plate discipline changes, the results, the ground ball, fly ball changes. There's a lot there, but his barrel rate's also through the roof compared to years past. So when he is taking care of business, it's been quite effective. Definitely an interesting profile. The BABIP's only 317, but that's actually high for Tyler O'Neill, which is a bit surprising as well. So,
and it's weird to see, not to cut you off there, but like it's weird to going back to the ground ball fly ball. Usually see the BABIP go up with like more ground balls and fewer fly balls because that's BABIP. But that makes me even more skeptical. That's a good point. Is the BABIP's higher like that with fewer ground balls?
Yeah. So there's a lot of reasons to expect maybe if you're in a trading league, trade Tyler O'Neill would be something to potentially think about there, because there might be a stretch coming up here that does not bode well for anybody that rosters Tyler O'Neill. Jerkson Profar, at one point this year, he said, yeah, stream him. He's playing every day. He's leading off. He's driving in runs. This is fun. And then he has kept doing it, and it's been pretty wild here. Hit 242 last year, hitting 320 this year. 10 homers expected last year, 25 expected this year for Profar. He's already got 7 this season, which is just insane to think about with Jerks and Profar. And the skills, I don't know. It's like he's hitting the ball harder, barrels up a bit, but everything else, there's a lot of similarities, but maybe I'm missing something. So what do you see with Jerks and Profar?
No, I see.
Homer to fly ball luck too.
Yes, just everything here. So the 7 home runs, but only on 7 barrels. And we will probably do a homer to barrel episode at some point. But rough rule of thumb is about half the home runs, a little more than half the home runs as you have barrels. So from that aspect, Jerkson Profar has been pretty fortunate on the home run front. Yes, hitting 320, but this is a guy we only have, again, 169 at-bats or plate appearances, I should say, so far this season of a 320 batting average. Profar hit 243 and 242 each of the last two seasons, and that's a sample of 1,150 plate appearances. I will trust that all day over the 320. I don't think anyone expects Profar to hit 320, but I don't. I mean, yes, the strikeouts are down a little bit, but like this just screams from the homer to barrel rate, the insanely high BABIP with like the hard contact is not any harder than it used to be. I just, nothing really. Like, congrats if you have Jerks and Profar and you've rode this wave, and maybe it continues a little longer, but I don't, this is not any kind of transformation that I'm seeing.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Like, I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop, but it just hasn't yet, which is pretty crazy with Profar. It just feels like it's a little late in the career to figure it out all of a sudden. So time will tell on that one. Another guy, Josh Rojas, who literally is one of the streakiest hitters every season. I think we have a discussion. There's always a 2 to 4 week stretch where you're like, wow, Josh Rojas is awesome. This is great. Well, he's doing it again right now, hitting 343. compared to 245 last year with 15 expected homers compared to 7 last year. Yeah, I don't see this lasting, but maybe I'm wrong. So what's your thoughts on Rojas?
I mean, Rojas did hit 264 and 269 back in 21 and 22 and over 1,000 plate appearances of that. So yes, like, yeah, he's not going to hit 340 or whatever again or going forward. But like, this is a guy who at least has a decent track record. And the biggest thing, we've talked about this on our Fab shows, is he's still leading off for Seattle. Yeah. And that's an offense that needs a spark. And Rojas has provided, as long as that keeps somewhat going. I don't think that changes with JP Crawford coming back soon. I like Josh Rojas still. I mean, he's still under 30, has a track record of decent five category production, never been a huge power bat, and he's not this year. A little bit more. I mean, 5 barrels already in 118 plate appearances. That's not nothing. But he runs, he's effective on the base pass, and he doesn't strike out that often. So, like, I think even rest of season, I'd probably take Rojas over Profar straight up.
I think that's fair. I think he still loses his leadoff spot to Crawford, but I could be wrong. They just love Crawford in the leadoff spot.
They do.
But yeah. The OBP skills that Crawford brings to the table. But we'll see. We'll see how that one plays out, as Crawford is started his rehab assignment on Tuesday night. So we'll see how that one plays out.
And the Profar San Diego lineup is infinitely better right now than Seattle's.
Yes. It's weird too. Like Padres, it feels like they're doing it so quietly, just in the southwest over there, just doing its thing. But every time I look at like the recent team stats for hitting versus righties and lefties, they keep getting better and better each week. It's like scary. They don't strike out and they just get the job done. They're pesky teams. Not tonight versus the Rockies, but they're a pesky team. So keep that in mind. We're going to skip Stephen Kwan because he's out right now, if that's okay. Let's go to Brent Rooker, who we're going to talk streaks. This is a streak, folks. Dude's hitting 303 right now, 246 last year. And he's just crushing baseballs is the nicest way I can say this. He's projected to hit 48 home runs and 600 plate appearances compared to 34 last year. He's already got 10 home runs this year. He's beasting out in a monster way once again. But there are some indicators, Ryan, that might say all good things will slowly come to an end. But we'll see. I think he's going to have I think the way I talked about it before is he'll have some cold spells, more hot spells. Like, he's going to do this throughout the season. This is who Brent Rooker is. So just ride the wave, essentially, is how this one feels. But what are your thoughts on Brent Rooker?
Did you see, you remember when the A's, they unveiled the Vegas stadium or whatever, and like the mock-ups of it? And it looks like this like spaceship in Vegas, and everyone just kind of crapped on it. Like, there were no bullpens in the picture. One of the other things, like, people like wrote whole articles about all the things that were wrong with this rendering, I guess I should call it. And one of the things that they said was wrong with it was look at the players listed on the lineup card on the scoreboard. They've got Brent Rooker hitting 303.
Yeah.
And he's exactly hitting 303 right now, which is just kind of funny. I saw that come across today. So, like, 303, no, Brent Rooker's not going to hit 303. The K rate is exactly where it's been. The guy strikes out all the time. Power looks great. Like, again, on a pace of, like you said, 48 home runs over a full season, and Brent Rooker will get to play a full season because, again, who else is Oakland going to throw out there? I think the power can stick and go 40 home runs. He's already got 11 barrels, even a couple bags, but 303. No, I think this is coming back down to like 230, 240. I wonder what I don't have the projections up for Rooker at the moment, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if the projections are still like 230, 240 for Brent Rooker, which is what I would expect batting average wise the rest of the way.
Yeah. Rest of season for Brent Rooker on the bat X, 230 average, 14 more homers, 2 more steals. So they're pretty low on him.
Yeah. And they do. And BatX, I know, does incorporate current season performance. And they adjust their rest. It's not just a playing time adjustment down every day. So they do adjust the skills based on what these players are showing this year. So BatX is and maybe other projection systems do there as well, but BatX, if you're looking at a Fangraphs in-season projection, it's the one I've gone to the most.
Yep, most definitely. Jordan Westbrook's a fun one. He was like a bat out of hell early in the season, just crushing everything. Things quieted down a bit. He's still hitting for like average right now, but the power's kind of disappeared from what we saw for a couple weeks there. On the season, he's hitting 298 with last year 260. He's still projected for 23 home runs over 600 plate appearances compared to 8 last season. I don't know. Like, I'm looking at his profile, and I think 23 is going to be tricky, but I could be totally wrong. When you look at Jordan Westbrook, does anything stand out to you with him?
It looks impressive to me. It looks impressive to me. Anytime you can cut down on your Ks from year one to year two, you can hit more barrels from year. He already has as many barrels in 154 plate appearances as he did in 228 plate appearances last year with Jordan with Baltimore. I like that year two improvement. That's been a big thing, a big takeaway. I think I mentioned on the last show, maybe a couple shows ago, like all these kind of sophomores that have really kind of thrived in year two so far this season. It's kind of an underrated story of 2024. I think the biggest thing is Jordan Westbrook is in the Orioles circle of trust, as we might call it, because we were just talking about Eston Kjerstad not getting playing time. It's like you're either in or you're out in Baltimore, and Jordan Westbrook is absolutely in, playing every single day at third base. I think that's huge given how good that lineup is. So I think Jordan Westbrook can keep this going, like this exact pace, honestly. Could approach 300 with 20-25 home runs. That's his current pace. I don't see why not. He's just a gainer because, like, last year was his rookie year, and shocker, he struggles in his rookie year.
Yes, shocker. Like, I believe in the batting average. I'm 100% there. I guess I'm still skeptical on the power, but I'd like to be proven wrong because I have a few shares of Jordan Westbrook, so that would be quite promising. Rake Cronenworth, it's appropriate to call him Rake again because he's back. Like, he's this back. Is fun. Last year sucked. The year before was the year of the Rake. Rake is back right now, hitting 279 this year, 229 last year, projected for 24 home runs this year compared to 11. He's already got 7 home runs this season. Dude's hitting third in a very good Padres lineup, like we talked about already. He's not striking out a ton, which he really never does. But you look at, I look at his profile numbers, and there's a lot to definitely take away, like the barrel rate's up, the hard hit rate's up, which would correlate to what's going down with Mr. Cronenworth. And I don't know, I'm not seeing a ton of outliers, like the home run to fly balls through the roof, which would mean some regression. But I still think a pretty solid finish of the season could be in line for Mr. Rake Cronenworth.
It's funny, you were talking about like Profar before, and coincidentally on the same team. It's like sometimes you pick these guys up as streamers and they just keep going. In Jake Cronenworth's case, he had that 4-hit game in Japan and or Korea.
Everyone wanted to draft him.
And everyone wanted to draft him, and they did, and he just keeps going. The power is the big thing. I don't know where this has come from, but an 11% barrel rate, 14 barrels already for Jake Cronenworth, like actually might deserve a few more home runs than the 7 that we've seen so far. It's just funny, like some of these guys you think, like I've always thought of Jake Cronenworth, especially in draft and hold season, is just like this dude who has middle corner eligibility, and he's a body that can play. And maybe I underrated him for that. And I just thought he was like a boring, like plate appearance compiler. And it's just funny how sometimes these guys, you don't think of them as having a high ceiling, but like sometimes these guys, these older, boring, quote unquote guys, do have a ceiling that we don't give them credit for. And maybe that changes with Cronenworth, but just felt like he was the ultimate kind of boring, high floor, play every day, low ceiling guy. And that has not been the case. The power uptick for me is the biggest thing. That looks pretty legit so far.
Yeah, the Rake one, I'll still never forget when I tweeted out, like, are we back in on Rake because he's projected to hit third for the Padres? And I got so many people like, no.
I remember crazy. That.
No. Yep. I'm like, okay, this is why I tweet these things. It's entertaining to watch.
But like, but were you only on it? But you were only on him because of that, right? I mean, because he's hitting third every day and first and second. Like, I don't want to speak for you, but like, I don't think we saw anything of the skills that were.
No, but the batting average, because he's free in drafts, like when it's flexibility, it's like the same reason I told you I took Jordan Westbrook with one of my last picks. Like, he was a corner infield, or if I waited on third base, he filled the mold. I was tweeting that out saying like, okay, why are we ignoring Jake Cronenworth if he's going to be in a really good lineup hitting third? Like, the power might not be there, but even when he's down, he has for an okay average. If he returns the average, he's gonna score runs. Like, there was stuff lining up for a possibility. Did I think it'd be this good? Not a chance. But it's like, I think sometimes just even opportunity is something to, especially later in drafts for me, is something I like to look at. So.
Mm-hmm.
So something on the mind there. Interesting one here. Jeremy Pena. Many people wrote off Jeremy Pena. It was a good campaign in his rookie season, and then things kind of dwindled a bit on the sophomore season, and it's kind of ramping back up again, hitting 338 entering Tuesday night, 263 last year, projected for 14 home runs at the end of the season, nine last year. Honestly, I think he, you know, projections even have him hitting more than 14 total right now. So this is an interesting one with Pena. So when you're looking at Jeremy Pena, what stands out? He's hitting cleanup on Tuesday night against the Oakland A's versus a lefty. This is a very eye-opening stuff to me.
It is. And that the plate approach is a lot better from Jeremy Pena. And we think, you know, we kind of know who he is. He's still pretty young, 26 years old. It's only his third season in the big leagues. And the strikeout rate has gone down every year for Jeremy Pena, 24 to 20, down to 13% so far this year. Couple things I also look at are your whiff rates for your hitters, because just like with pitchers, whiffs and Ks kind of go together. That's gone down every year for Jeremy Pena, 16, 14, down to 11.5% so far this year. So there is some legitimate plate skill growth going on here, to the tune of 338. Of course, not a 374 BABIP. Like, that is massive. Jeremy Pena is one who does carry a little bit higher BABIP than your typical hitter. So, he's been a career like 310 BABIP guy. League average BABIP is like 290, 300. So you would expect Jeremy Pena to maybe be like 270, 280 maybe, which is useful to play every day, like you said, and clean up in Houston and hit, you know, if he can hit 280 or whatever, the rest of the way, if these plate skill gains hold. I mean he's not like a huge power bat. I don't really believe the power, and like you said, the projections, a lot of the projections are like 12 more home runs the rest of the way for Jeremy Pena, which would put him at like 16, and then maybe like 16 and 16 more bags. So you get a good batting average, you get a 15-15 guy with counting stats in Houston's lineup. We talk about the Alex Bregman effect, those hidden runs in RBI we talked about all draft season. That helps Jeremy Pena's value even more. So yes, some pullback for sure coming in the batting average department, but given the improvements with the plate approach for Pena, all those hits in that Houston lineup, and you got to think at some point these Houston bats are going to start to explode. I like Pena this year. I will fully admit I was not in on Pena at all entering the season.
Yeah, they're going to get going. It can't just be Kyle Tucker every day. So, it's pretty impressive.
I think Kyle Tucker leads the majors in homers.
He has, I believe, 12 or 13. If it's such 12, Mr. Naylor tied him up on Tuesday. So that's a fun one as well.
I teed you up for that one.
Yes, he nailed it. But here is a clip. People, get your recorders out for this one. Ellie De La Cruz. Something's going to come out of this that'll make someone angry when we talk. But Ellie De La Cruz hitting 262 last year, 235. He's projected to get 32 home runs over 600 plate appearances this year, 18 last year. He's already got 25 steals with 9 homers, hitting 262 like we talked about this season. It's pretty bonkers stuff what Ellie De La Cruz is doing, especially since he's still striking out a ton. He's walking more, so maybe he's swinging less. I know I've seen those stats out there everywhere, but his barrel rate is through the roof compared to last year. While still hitting the ball on the ground almost 50% of the time. So it is quite a, I hate using the word luck, but we use it because usually it is luck. But to be able to hit the ball on the ground that much, yet still hit that many barrels, it's like when you do elevate the ball, you're not missing very often, which is pretty cool. But how sustainable is that, in my opinion?
Yeah, I continue to have no idea what to do with Ellie De La Cruz. The stolen bases have been there, which is awesome. However, and this is the Esteri Ruiz effect that I talked about all draft season, all offseason. Like, Ellie De La Cruz could legitimately steal like 90, 100 bases this year. At what point do those steals for your fantasy team not matter anymore because you're so far ahead in stolen bases? You know, like, so it helps Ellie De La Cruz's roto value or whatever when you pull up an auction calculator. You know, if you're already well ahead of stolen bases in the first place because you have Ellie, are you really actually gaining anything in the standings when he steals this 79th, 80th, 81st base? NFBC leagues, non-trading leagues, nothing you can really do about it. In trading leagues, I would absolutely see and try and time where you're at in stolen bases. Because no matter what, like, Ellie De La Cruz was great in April. He's been terrible in May. Stolen bases have been there throughout. You know that's going to be there throughout. Just try and time that if you're in a trading league, because at some point there's going to be diminishing returns on just the elite, elite stolen base total. Batting average and home runs, I have no idea what to think for Ellie De La Cruz. 8 home runs, hit 280 in April. Bubba, he's hitting 220 with one homer, has 2 RBI for all of May. Like, that's just what you, I mean, you can nitpick and, you know, maybe that's a reason to doubt him. I don't know. I'm sure there'll be another heater, maybe 2 more heaters coming up for Ellie. Just so hard to predict. But that's the only thing I wanted to add is the stolen bases. Like, at some point, though, that's not going to matter in your standings because there's so many of them.
Yeah, the Bat X has him hitting 256 the rest of the way, so pretty close to where he's at now. 16 more home runs, 36 more stolen bases. So that's a 27-61 situation there with like 255 average. It's not bad. Not a bad season, but yeah, it's Joe Arrico in the chat. Ellie's washed, confirmed. Yep, there you go, everybody.
Yeah. Until he hits 10 in June and I look like an idiot again, but whatever.
All right, we have a few names left here, but I think I'm getting ready to go to the fader side, because I don't think we need to talk about Paul DeJong. Don't think we need to talk about Connor Joe or Oswaldo Cabrera or Tyler Nevin if you want to, but we can if you'd like.
Man, the hate. No, I agree.
Yeah, I think those are kind of names where I think we're all kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop in these scenarios, and we move along in that situation. And let's go to Nelson Velasquez on the fader side of thing, because I'm glad you opened it. You mentioned him towards the beginning of this. It's a guy I know I liked if you needed power late in drafts. I didn't have as much as I thought I would have, but it's been a weird go here. You know, 226 average entering Tuesday, 235 last year. He was projected at 57 home runs last year because let's not forget that's Vince Velasquez's page I'm on. That's not going to cut it.
he was on pace to hit 57, not projected.
On pace to hit 57 home runs last year. Right now, he's on pace to hit 10. Nelson did go deep on Tuesday night, which is a plus. I'll say that much. But he entered Tuesday with 2 home runs, hitting 226, which was not great. Bob is the best way to put it. And if you look at his overall numbers, like last year's barrel rate, 21%, down to 5.3, 36% hard hit rate. That's not going to do it. But what I was going to say earlier, 17 home runs last year in 53 games. So he was on some crazy paces. How do you look at this season and assess Nelson Velasquez?
Dude, yeah. So naturally, about 2 hours after this board gets created, Nelson Velasquez 3-run homer off of Logan Gilbert, who's had a rough couple starts lately.
That is correct.
Very concerning stuff for Nelson Velasquez. We thought we'd get the power that was we knew we'd get a bad batting average. That hasn't changed because the K rate's so high and he swings so much and misses. Dude, he had four barrels all season entering play today on Tuesday. So, I mean, that's just a complete power outage. And at some point you have to wonder, like, does he keep DHing every day for the Royals? Because the Royals are actually good. Like, they have a good lineup. What's his OBP can't be. Yeah, 294 OBP. With 2 home runs, and it's mid-May, I guess 3 home runs now. You really have to wonder about playing time, and then I also am very concerned about the lack of really any hard contact for Nelson Velasquez. So,
yeah. It's that hard contact that I kind of rely on. He would be an amazing one to see maybe the bat speed changes from year to year.
Exactly, yes.
Like, that is what I want to see right there.
And yeah, bat speed and swing length. Is the swing longer? Is he slowing down? Is there something going on to drive that? Because there is just, I can't think of any outside of injury. Like, it's very weird to see just a complete collapse in power like that.
Yep. Very, very odd. Matt Olson. I don't think we're worried about Matt Olson, but let's talk about Matt Olson. .283 average last year, .209 entering Tuesday. He was on pace for 45 home runs last year, on pace for 15 this year. He hit 54 last year, so he overachieved last year, so that's a plus. But when you're looking at Matt Olsen's at 720 plate appearances compared to 600, let me clarify that real quick before someone says anything. But when you're looking at Matt Olsen, what are we thinking here? Because he still hits the ball very hard, still barrels it up a ton, fewer ground balls, which is interesting. So what are our thoughts? And Matt Olsen went deep on Tuesday.
Yeah, I was going to say. Also hit a three-run home run mere hours after this board was created. So just trying to lift, you know, Bubba, just trying to do my part and lift the spirits of
people. Of any early.
I couldn't do it for Nolan Jones, of course, since he's on the IL. Number two, we skipped over, but no, not worried at all about Matt Olsen. Like you said, I mean, the barrel rate's almost the same as it was last year. Little bit down, 16-13%, but I mean that's a couple barrels and he's right back to where he was. And I'm sure tonight's dong was a barrel that would give him 14 barrels on the season to 5 home runs for Matt Olsen. So like I'm not worried one bit about the power. K's are up a little bit. We know Matt Olsen. I don't think anyone was expecting another .283 batting average for Matt Olsen, but I'm not too concerned given how hard he hits the ball. A 26% strikeout rate is certainly doable for like a 260-ish batting average. I'm not worried at all. We've been talking for a while about how Atlanta's, I think a budding explosion this summer. I think they're going to be fine.
Good choice of words there, my friend. Corey Seager, he went deep as well on Tuesday night.
He did? Good God, dude. Well. Yeah. This is crazy.
He hit .327 last year, .235 this year, over 600 plate appearances last year, 33 home runs, over 600 projected this year. We're looking at 14 home runs. He has 4 so far, well, now 5 this season. But, A, he's been banged up a ton, so that's one thing for me. The hard hit rate is plummeted this year compared to last year, which is a bit concerning. What else do you see when you look at Corey Seager that maybe makes you feel okay? Because I know some people are still like totally 100% no concerns with Corey Seager, but I think, you know, it's got to be a little concern.
Yeah, I mean, I think I wrote up Seager in a hidden injury column for HQ a couple weeks ago. Like, that's really the only concern is with the sports hernia. Like, is it just a ramp up or is he still something still wrong down there? Because Corey Seager isn't Corey Seager. We know what Corey Seager can do. So that's really the proposition here is it's just either it's a, you know, 6-week cold spell, which happens. You have a good year and have a 6-week cold spell. Sometimes it just hits at the beginning of the season, or B, like he's not fully healthy or ramped up or whatever. I think, you know, fully healthy is probably the more likely, but that's my concern. And I don't have the answer as to whether which one's right or wrong, because we don't know if he's fully healthy or not, because we don't get that information.
We do not get that information. We will after the season when he has surgery, but we don't
have Exactly.
I'm going to ask this one just because it's on the paper here. Ronald Acuña Jr., this is interesting. Just going to throw it out there, hitting .245 so far, .253, .337 last year, 33 home runs last year, projected 10 homers on pace for this year in 600 plate appearances. It's one of those, like, the barrel rate's cut in half from last year. Hard hit rate's down about 6%, but, you know, fly ball's down 5%. That's kind of correlated to line drives, which is still okay. Shouldn't crush him. But this is a rough go, and some of the numbers kind of resemble more of his 2022 season, if you look at some of the under-the hood stats, one would say. So what's your level of – I don't know if concern's the right word, or I don't know. What's your thoughts on Acuña?
That's actually a really good point. I didn't think about the 2022. He's almost – more stolen bases in terms of pace, but like this is kind of 2022 all over again. In 2022, Acuña hit .266 with 15 home runs, 29 bags, like 71 runs, 50 RBI. Like, not a terrible season, but not that great. And obviously just went bananas last year. I don't know, man. You could still say it's early. But like he has snapped right back. The biggest thing is I rarely see jumps in strikeout rate like this. Acuna, you never see it go from 24%, which is kind of like league average, to 11%, which is what Acuna did last year, which is just crazy. It's gone right back up to 26%. So, like, I don't know what Acuna was doing last year. I wish he would do more of it, but like that is definitely starting to look like an outlier to me.
Yeah, quite a bit as an outlier. So we'll see if anybody could have a hot like 2 month stretch. It's definitely Ronald Acuna Jr. Wouldn't shock any of us, but it does stand out a bit at this point in time. I'm gonna jump around here for a second. Corbin Carroll. I think most of us think there's still a shoulder injury here. Like, you look at his numbers: 197 average this year, 285 last year, 23 homer pace last year, 7 this year. He only has 2 home runs so far this year, only 8 stolen bases. He had 54 steals last year to top things off. Like, the strikeouts are actually down, which is interesting. BABIP's like 100 points down, which is just dreadful. But the barrel rate, the hard hit rates, you name it, it is not good for Corbin Carroll. Like, I'd be shocked if it's not the shoulder, but do you see anything else that might make you think otherwise?
No, not really. Corbin Carroll was the headliner in that same column with Corey Seager and the hernia playing hurt. So, and the same could be said for Acuna with the knee. I think we forget he had that meniscus scare like right before the season started, right before a Tout Wars draft. I remember that. So, another one where I'd mentioned this before, but I'd love to see the swing speed, whatever it's called, average bat speed for Carroll compared to last year, because would like to see if that shoulder is right or wrong. But, wanted to see if he has he been any better in May. I know he's had a couple games with some hard contact, but let's see.
Yeah,
want to look at his hard hit percent. Really well. Oh my god! Yeah, no. So a 22% hard hit rate in March and April, which is awful. It's gone up. It's gone up to 25%, which is still awful in May. So no, I don't really see any like reasons for optimism here.
Yep, I'm with you. Let's go to a fun one. Bo Bichette. Maybe we've heard of him on the show. Just gonna throw it out there. Hitting 218 this year. Last year, 306. 20 home run pace last year. 8 home run pace this year. He is running better than last year, I'll say that much. Striking out less. BABIP, just like Corbin Carroll, 100 points lower, basically. But 3 total barrels. 2.5% barrel rate is unbelievably horrible. And 51% ground ball rate. It's bad for Mr. Bichette. Is there any optimism here?
Well, there's some, but not as much as O'Neill Cruz, which was our beer bet either last episode or 2 episodes ago. So O'Neill's looking pretty good, by the way.
Yes, he is.
So I like that. In all seriousness, Bichette, yeah, the lack of power is like just confounding. 3 barrels in 160 plate appearances. He had 50, 48, 44. Each of the last 3 seasons, like consistently pretty good power hitter, Bo Bichette, and it has gone by the wayside. Like you said, I am encouraged by running more. Like, that's also a sign that he's probably not playing hurt and striking out less. Like, I think the batting average is much more likely to go back up to 300 rest of season and rebound than the power. I just, you got to have some hard contact for me to say the power is going to come back. So I think Bo Bichette could be a batting average and stolen base asset, but like, man, I don't know what that home run total looks like at the end of the year. It's pretty shaky, man.
It's really bad.
Joe in the chat saying that Bo Bichette goes the other way too often, which that would coincide with a slip in power for sure.
Yeah, Michael Cicchini mentions on Carroll that the broadcast the other day said Carroll is striding further towards the mound than he did last year. Well, that will affect your swing path, probably. I'm just going to throw that out there. That'll change things
fixable.
Up for sure.
Fixable, right?
You'd hope so. Yeah, you'd hope fixable. So definitely something there. Let's go Gleyber Torres, 273 last year, 208 this year in the batting average department, 22 home run pace last year, a whopping 7 pace this year. He has 2 home runs and 3 steals, hitting 208 this year so far. It's another guy that weirdly the BABIP's not that far off, which is scary to think, but the quality of contact metrics are much, much lower. There are definitely some holes when it comes to Gleyber Torres. It just feels like his isn't that far off, but then again, he's striking out a boatload more than last year.
Yeah, striking out a boatload more last year, but similar to Acuna, I think last year was the strikeout outlier for Gleyber Torres. 23% K rate in 2022 and 24% this year. So, and actually, three of the last 4 years, Gleyber's been 20% or above. It's just last year he cut down on the Ks. We've talked about Gleyber a few times on the pod, and that hit by pitch on the hand in the second game of the season probably doesn't help, and probably is contributing to having five barrels in 174 plate appearances. Just no power there. In an otherwise, like, this would be a good year to hit because the Yankees lineup, from a production standpoint, and Juan Soto's going bananas. It picked a bad year to have a slump.
Yeah, they're starting to produce as a team right now. So, yeah, definitely a rough year to go about that for Mr. Gleyber Torres. A couple more here. I want to mention James Outman. He had a good start last year, slump in the middle, finished strong. Got a lot of us optimistic again. 248 average last year. This year, 150 entering Tuesday. 24 home runs last year. Pace 16 home run – or 16 home run pace this year. So you're projected to at least get some power out of James Outman, which is nice. Playing time's kind of drizzled of late. But you look at what he did last year in the quality count, 11% barrel down to 6 this year. Hard hits still very similar, though, which leaves me a little hope for James Outman. But are you seeing anything that leaves you hope for James Outman?
Not really. And I do think the playing time, like, the Dodgers need production. They are in it for this year, for sure. Groundbreaking analysis, I know. But I think James Outman is at risk of losing playing time the way this is going. And another year of a K rate north of 30%, which is just way too much, especially when you live with it with 11% barrel rate. When that gets down to like 6%, which is where it's at right now with Outman, you get really worried. He's in the middle of a stretch. I mentioned this, I think, on the Thursday show, where the Dodgers are getting a ton of right-handed pitching, facing a ton of right-handed pitching. So it would be an apt time for Outman to start doing something, but still, this week has not really done much. So I'm pretty worried about Mr. Outman.
Yeah, well, I can see that for sure. I think I dropped him in a couple. I still have him in a couple. He's close to getting the full kibosh type situation. Let's put it that way.
Yep.
Yainer Diaz is a fun one because 282 average last year, 270 so far this season. The dude was on pace for 37 home runs last year at 23. He's only on pace for 11 this year. He's hit 3 so far this season. So the average is still very good, but the power has dwindled, which, it's odd because the 5.4% barrel compared to 12% last year is a big difference, but his hard hit rate 6% higher this year. So that just points to one thing for me. And yep, there it is. Almost 14% ground ball rate increase. So that seems fixable, honestly.
That's a massive increase too. To go from 43%, which is like league average, to whatever it is now, 57%. Like, that's tough, and that's why the power is not there. But I agree. If you're going to lose power, it's one of two things or both. It's either you're not hitting in the air or you're not hitting it hard, again, or both. The more fixable one is if you can still hit the ball hard and get back to that launch angle that you had last year. So that is the saving grace for Yiner Diaz. I sure hope it comes soon, man, because, like, good God, I've got him on a bunch of teams. And the 270 batting average hasn't been bad, but I really want to see more power from Yiner, man.
Especially hitting sixth every day in that lineup, there's a lot of damage he could do there. And that's just – I think it comes. I really do. But then I think it does. And then you remember he's a catcher. And a lot of catcher stats dwindle as the season goes on. It's just one of those things because of the wear and tear. So we'll see how that plays out with Yiner Diaz and hope for the best in that scenario. We didn't talk Garver, Noda, Siri, Flores, or Nolan Jones or Drury. Anybody you'd like to discuss there before we hit some listener questions up?
No, Drury. That's just rubbing it in my face. But
back on the IL. I skipped IL guys because they might have been playing hurt for part of it type thing.
For sure. Glad the top three guys all hit home runs. Let's get that. Let's get that Yiner Diaz home run bloom board jinx going. Let's do that.
Yeah, that would be real cool. Get a Yiner Diaz jinx going. I think that'd make a lot of us feel pretty good about life. All right, we'll start with some questions in the chat here, and we'll start with Mr. Uncle Ted had one earlier. Otto Lopez or Edmundo Sosa.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's Uncle Ted, so he's gonna come from the hilltops here with some. But Otto Lopez, youngster for Miami, he's hitting 306 so far in 39 plate appearances, 3 homers, 1 steal. I honestly, if Lopez is gonna play every day, I'd take a chance with him because Edmundo Sosa, yeah, he ain't it full time. That's just me personally.
Yeah, I feel like we know who Sosa is. And we don't know who Lopez is. And when you're speculating on guys like this, I would go with the guy who we don't know as much about because there might be a ceiling there. And Otto Lopez, I mean, I think at least against right-handed pitching, is going to play every day and has shown a pulse of power so far. 3 barrels already in 35 plate appearances with excellent bat-to-ball skills and a bag. So I'd go Otto Lopez.
Yep, I'm there as well. Michael Cicchini in the chat says, question for later, Páez or Adell, Roto scoring?
Who'd you go with? I'm going
with Adell. I like Páez a lot. I'm going to Adell. I think this is 25-year-old prospect we've been waiting for. He's running. He's hitting for power. Like, you look at a lot of his metrics, they actually stand out in a lot of charts right now. If he'd actually hit in a real spot in the batting order, that would help. At the same time, the Angels have no one else to go to, where the Dodgers, what if Altman starts hitting and Páez slumps a little bit? Like, that could flip very quickly. So I'm going to go with Adell, but I think Páez is legit too.
I think I'm going to go Adell too. Páez has quietly quieted down in the last couple weeks. I know this last week, let's see. Yeah, the last full week, the May 5th week, hit 158 and is with no homers, one RBI. And then last week, or this current week, is, I don't know what he did tonight against your Giants, probably had a couple hits for sure.
He scored 10 runs, so he probably did something.
Yeah, probably did something, but 1 for 7 so far this week. So it hasn't been great lately, but I'd go Adell for the reasons you said.
Páez actually went 0-for-5 with 4 strikeouts tonight.
Oh my God.
Wow. I had to look it up. We're
talking Holy crap.
Everybody else is doing stuff. He did nothing. That's like the worst fantasy feeling when you see a team and you're like, they scored 12 runs tonight. And you go look at your guy and he's just like dead.
That's literally just. Yeah. I've been trying to think, because that's been a phenomenon for years. I've been trying to think of like what to call that. But. Never clicked, but it might be the Andy Páez. Yeah,
it might be the Andy Páez going forward. We'll see how that one plays out. All right, Stephen Crawford on Twitter says, in a 10-team head-to-head categories OBP league, should I drop Jaron Duran with another hitter like Luis Rengifo, Brian De La Cruz, other? So would you do Duran for Rengifo or Brian De La Cruz? 10-team OBP league.
I'd hold Duran.
Yeah, I'd hold Duran as well. I know people are kind of flustered because he's slowed down a bit, but overall skill set, Duran's still the guy there.
What's up with our guy? Is he alive?
Haven't heard anything elite recently. Hopefully the antibiotics are kicking in. That's all I'm hoping for.
Hopefully though,
they're a short drive to TJ's. There's some good medicine down there. Go get it, boys.
It's true. Since we had the here we go. Rengifo fielded grounders on Monday and could return from the IL when eligible on Friday per MLB.
That would be glorious.
So. Hopefully he didn't get the he did get the blisters on. Yeah, that's right. He got the blisters on his feet. So that must be, that's what I was worried about last show, because I was all sick. And I was like, what if I get that next? But I never did.
Yeah, you survived. You're good to go in that regard. Chris Wilson says, I think I'll take the side on the right rest of season. That's probably the safer bet, the positive regression side. But I don't know. The more we looked at it, I think I still like a lot more the left side than the right side on this one.
Yeah, and at a certain point of the season, I still lean the right side. I still, and basically what that means, again, for those not looking at the screen or whatever, we're looking at the screen, leaning more towards positive regression at this point in the season. But there is a point in the season where it's like, all right, I believe in what I'm seeing this year from these guys.
Yep. No, I'm 100% with you on that one. Corbin Young has a tongue in cheek one here. Profar, Josh Rojas, and Connor Joe are studs with a goofy emoji. So, yeah. kind of what you're saying. You expect some regression both directions. That would be what Corbin's kind of saying there. Old school has Mickey Moniak question mark. That's his question.
Was Moniak on one of the boards?
I don't think he was. See him on the boards.
Just a
thought. He's
a life
he's
question an about parent. Moniak. I think he's platooning still, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what it feels like. Another reason why Adele's not a bad pick these days. But yeah, Moniak we thought would play every day when Trout went down. And that has not been the case for Mr. Mickey Moniak. He didn't even play against a righty on Tuesday.
Five barrels hitting 190 or hitting 183, five barrels, 98 plate appearances. It was a good run last year for Mickey Moniak in partial action, as you would know, Bubba.
Yes, yes.
Some of your draft and hold teams there, pretty good for you. But
you can move on. I think in a fab league for Mickey Moniak. Let's just put it that way. That's not gonna, unless you're in about a 24 team NL only or AL only league. Probably don't need to worry about Mickey Moniak at this point in time.
He'd be sadly he's relevant in like 12 team ALers, but that's more that's more damning on that 12 team AL format than Mickey Moniak.
Here we go. David Green says, "What about Max Kepler still not playing against lefties? Is it just a crazy hot streak?" It's just the way the Twins operate. And he'll be one of the random lefties that will play occasionally versus lefties compared to others. It's a hot streak, but he's still very good. Like Kepler's very good versus right-handed pitching.
Agreed. And agreed that, like, yes, if there's a lefty more than, like, I guess Wallner's not, but like more than Larnach, Kepler, if they need somebody, Kepler would play against a lefty. But the Twins have, like, oddly, a lot of their righties have stayed healthy this year.
Yes, and now they're getting two more back pretty soon.
And they're getting them back. Yeah, exactly. So I would not expect Kepler to – he's tricky in a weekly league because I would not expect him to play much at all against lefties with a full or even semi-healthy roster in Minnesota.
The funny thing is, though, is even with Kepler, like the second the lefty comes out, he's in the game. Like you'll see you'll notice he's not starting, and then you'll go look at game logs at the end of the night, and Kepler went like 1-for-2.
Yeah.
Because like, he comes in right away, so – it's annoying. I get where David is coming from there because I have a lot of Kepler and Larnach shares because they faced, I think, five or six righties this week. And they both sat on Tuesday when they faced a lefty. That was just the breaks. But that's just kind of what you have to go with. And that's kind of a lot of baseball these days in reality. There's not a whole lot of teams. Yep. Like it's the Dodgers, the Braves, Padres kind of actually. Basically, the really good teams don't platoon much. Everybody else is platooning like crazy.
I forget who, because I've got a lot of Kepler too. I forget. But on Friday when I was doing lineups for NFBC, he was out because they were in, and like Edward Julian too, because Minnesota's playing lefty. But I looked and righties on Saturday, Sunday. It's like I'm rolling with it.
Yep. You roll them for sure. Yep. So you just roll. Like it's like Willier Abreu. It was 3-3 last week. So you sat him, but it's six or it's five or six righties this week. You play him. Like that's just, there's certain guys you're going to have to take the bumps with these days. It's not as easy as it once was to just lock in guys playing every day. It's not a thing anymore.
And in a weekly format, usually my cutoff's like four or five. If it's four, it's like they have to be really good. If it's four righties, they have to be really good for me to play them. If it's five, I'll usually roll with it.
Yep, 100% with you on that one, Mr. Bloomfield. Great questions in the chat as always. Great interaction as always. Final thoughts, Bloomfield, before we come back on Thursday talking week 9 fab.
Already, damn.
Yes.
No, just hope for some pitcher wins, man. Jesus, sure. Let's do this.
It's tough in these streets, Bloomfield. It's tough in these streets, and I saw a report while we were recording. Keaton Wynn strained forearm, getting an MRI tomorrow.
Oh,
Jorge Soler starting a rehab assignment this week. He's fine, so he might be back this weekend. Actually, so keep an eye on Soler in your biweekly lineups. Keaton Wynn. If you still roster him, you can cut him now. Just go for it. Call it a day. Might get some Mason Black back in your life, Ben Tidd. It's okay. You might get him back here sooner than later.
Yeah, don't give up yet. It's got to be Mason Black, right?
If it isn't, like I already want to riot half the time I watch these games, but I keep my cool because it's just baseball and what's the point? But yeah, there's really no reason not to have. You put him on the 40-man roster for two starts. Like you need to use him now. That's about it.
And this is the full circle moment of the episode. We started with Bubba just starting to go south quickly, talking about the Giants, and look where we're at again.
Yep. Welcome. I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you ever want a Full Tilt podcast, just let me know. I can live stream a game with you. We can really have some fun with it and give you the whole experience. But until then, we'll talk Fab on Thursday. Hope you guys enjoyed tonight's show. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm on Twitter at BDNChicker. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 134. Catch you all next time.